hey, got a crazy family? Love hearing stories about crazy families? Then you need to check out our brand new podcast called My Crazy Family, available wherever you get podcasts. Just search My Crazy Family right now, press subscribe, and don't miss any brand new episodes of My Crazy Family. You can even share your stories if you so please. We'd love to hear them. My Crazy Family. Search and subscribe wherever you download podcasts. Today on The Grave Talks, is death that different? A conversation with Linda Brooks. Linda Brooks, as a young girl, often wondered who the mysterious man was that hung out outside of her door. Because he appeared very lifelike, she was initially confused about what to make of him. Was he alive? Was he dead? She'd soon discover that the mysterious figure she'd encountered was, in fact, on the other side. This particular individual, however, had no malicious intentions. He was just trying to locate his late daughter, whom Linda resembled very much. For most people, this encounter with death would be very frightening. For Linda, it wasn't, and it was the first of many. It would also be the first step towards learning more about what awaits us on the other side. A life that might not be so different from the one we live here on Earth. All of this and more in today's Grave Talks. Conversation with Linda Brooks.
I think initially the interest started at a very, very young age. I had my first what we call paranormal encounter with spirit at the very young age of 7. And this happened in the house that I lived in. And what happened was I actually had with this, it was showing himself in shadow form, basically. He was male. I definitely could sense that just from that young age, because obviously I could see, hear and sense and feel spirit. So I had a lot of the senses already quite open at that very young age. So it was easy for me to gauge that he was a man. He just presented himself in very dark shadow form, but obviously the outline of a person, a human being. But he kept waking me up every single night at the bottom of my bed. And obviously it got to the point where it was getting very uncomfortable because he would make me feel very paralyzed. I couldn't scream for my parents to come and help me out because he was getting so close. And I was literally petrified going to bed because I knew he would come back again and again and again. And I just didn't understand the reason why and what this was all about, what it was I was actually seeing at that time, you know, being so young. And it turned out that my father had actually also had this encounter with this gentleman in spirit as well. I didn't know about this until I was a bit older, where my dad actually sat me down and had the talk when we were reminiscing about our times in this particular house and what we experienced as a family. And it was only in that time frame, when I was old enough to understand, he had explained to me that he also had the same encounter with this gentleman in spirit, who presented himself the same way as I'd seen him. To describe him, he just sort of like had a top hat and a very dark cloak. But you could see the outline of his shoes and his trousers as well. So you knew he was actually clothed underneath the cloak as well. And he's wearing like a suit. And my father was saying to me, it got to the point where it was really getting very uncomfortable even for him, because this gentleman would actually come into his bedroom after leaving mine. It was just literally a little landing space at the top of the stairs. So you literally went out of my bedroom to the top of the landing and straight over to the next bedroom where my parents slept. And he would actually go in there and sit on my dad's bed on his side only, and my dad would feel him breathing on him, which really disturbed my father, because obviously he wasn't a great believer of anything spiritual. He was very skeptical. So obviously it wasn't something he would embrace. You know, it was something he just flatly denied. You know, once you'd passed over to him, that was it. That was the end. There was nothing beyond that. And certainly his perceptions of that changed dramatically, as you can imagine, because of what he experienced in this house. And as I say, every night he would end up having the same occurrences, just as I would, with him, the spirit gentleman, standing at the bottom of my bed. He would only wake me up. I shared the bedroom with my sister, who was 5 years younger than me. He would never get her to wake up, or she'd never stir, never cry, nothing. It was always me. He seemed to walk in the room and automatically wake me out of a deep sleep. And with my father, when he was getting to the point where he was sitting on the bed and breathing on him, it got too much for him. And he said, no, we're going to have to leave. We can't possibly put up with this. It's getting too full on. And obviously my dad not knowing what he was experiencing neither, because of his skeptic background with not believing in this type of paranormal or anything beyond death. It was very uncomfortable for him to take that that to the step where he couldn't understand it, couldn't explain it. And he couldn't rationalize it either, you know. So he was in a situation of panic, I think, more than anything, because he wondered what this thing was that he was seeing and whether this was going to be a case of, if he come that close to him while he was sitting at the bed and breathing on him, what else was this particular entity capable of doing, which was one of the things that really worried my dad the most, was the safety aspect of the people in the house, including myself and my younger sister, as well as my mum, who never ever saw anything like this. Again, she was always asleep. It was just my dad and myself that used to be targeted quite regularly every night with this. And one night he actually followed, he was brave enough to actually follow this entity after he got up from the bed. He'd walked out the door and down the stairs towards the bottom end of the staircase. And my dad was brave enough at that point to say, look, I need to know what is this thing and where is it going? So he actually followed it, and he'd followed it all the way down to the bottom of the staircase, around by the lounge area that we had at the time. And around the side of the lounge, we had what's known as a basement in American terms. Well, it's a cellar known in the UK term. So this thing actually went down the cellar steps into the basement area, and it just disappeared into a wall. And it just was defined, thinking, I can't believe what I've just witnessed, you know, this thing going through the wall and just disappearing. How is that possible? So from my dad's point of view, he was always very much on edge after that happened, after that encounter. But with me, that was an awakening in a sense, because I knew what this thing was. You know, I don't know how I knew at such an age, but I did. And obviously it was at that point onwards that I actually began to start seeing other spirit entities and spirit people. And obviously they would come and talk to me. I would talk with them. I would communicate with them. Never felt that uneasy like I did do with that particular entity. I don't know why I felt that way. I don't know whether it was the energy he was giving or whether it was the fact that he just looked sinister in the way that he presented himself. But other spirit people were very easy and comfortable to sit down and talk with. So I didn't really feel out of my depth like I did do with that particular character.
Wow.
But with this, there was a little bit more to the story with this. Some years later, my grandmother, who's also very spiritually gifted at the time, she's no longer with us, bless her, but she was very open to spirit. She could see, hear and sense them as well, which I think it was a generational thing as well, where we sort of like had it passed down the female generation. And she was telling me that she knew who this particular gentleman was. And she lived next door to the house that we were in at the time. And she says, I'd need to probably sit down and have this talk with you, because I think I know why you're seeing all these things. And I know why you saw that particular entity in your bedroom and why it kept waking you up. And she said, I think we need to have a chat. So I thought, oh, this sounds intriguing. You know, I was obviously a lot older at that time. I was, you know, in my teens. So I was a little bit more able to absorb the information she was giving me and understand it a little bit more. And it turned out this gentleman did actually live in the property that we were in, that he was appearing in my room. And it turned out that he had a younger daughter who was a very similar age to myself, very similar hair colour, very similar in the way I looked to his daughter, which triggered, I think, a memory in him to bring him back. Sadly, his daughter he lost. She passed away when she was brought to a swimming baths where the local area, we had a swimming baths area where children could go and swim. He'd actually brought his daughter to the local swimming bath area, and cut a long story short, she actually dived in at the shallow end of the pool and hit her head. at the bottom, and sadly she died as a result of her head injuries. And obviously he never forgave himself for the accident that his daughter had, and obviously he had made himself responsible for her death because he didn't do the right thing in supervising her, or it was a case of he thought that she was diving in at the deep end rather than the shallow end. And obviously all these things were tormenting his mind as he lived on when she had passed over. So much so, it got to the point where he couldn't live with the torment. So in the end, he actually took his own life. He committed suicide. And it turned out he'd hung himself on the back of our bedroom door.
Wow.
So my grandmother knew this because she was the actual woman who went into the house and found him and actually cut him down. Yeah.
How did your grandmother know him at the time? Were they friends? Were they?
Yes, they were friends and obviously neighbours at the time as well, because she lived next door to them. But he had a disabled wife. Obviously, he went to work and my mother helped look after his disabled wife as well as working herself. So he'd get in later on in the evening time. So she would make sure that his wife was okay before he got home a few hours later. Obviously, she was pretty much bedbound at that point. So they always made sure that she was kept enough, you know, and that, you know, because obviously they had no central heating back in those days in houses. So obviously she always made sure that she'd got the blankets over her, that she'd have a light on in the house when it started getting dark before the husband would come home from work. So my grandmother was always in and out the property to help look after his wife. But at that time, his wife... When she went in to see her, obviously, and sorted her out, she came out and she heard the husband go in, because the houses are terraced houses. So literally the walls are so thin, you'd hear a little knock, you'd hear it quite loud. So she heard, obviously, a sign from him. He used to always knock on the wall to say, "I've arrived, I'm in the house, you know, and I'm back from work." So that was their little signal to know that everything was okay. So she thought, oh, he's back home. She's going to be looked after. That's fine. I can enjoy the rest of my evening. And it was only as the time went on that his wife normally had a hot drink at a certain time in the evening. I think she had a hot cocoa drink to try and get her off to sleep. And she'd always had it at a set time in the evening. Obviously, her husband would be back from work by then and would bring the cocoa up to her to give to her. And obviously this night he didn't come upstairs. So obviously she thought that was a bit odd, because she knew he was in the house. She knew he was back from work because he'd already came up and seen her. But the fact he didn't come on when he's usually so regular on his timekeeping, you know, you could set your watch by him. He was so stickler for time. And it turned out obviously he didn't come for a reason. He was no longer with us. He'd already hung himself in the bedroom on the back of the door, unbeknownst to her, who was in the other bedroom. And of course she couldn't get out of bed to go and check where he was. So in the end she ended up having a stick that she could knock on the wall to get my grandmother's attention. So if she needed anything, and obviously she was on her own, she'd knock on the wall for my grandmother to go and see to her. That was her signal to say, "I need some help." Mm-hmm. So anyway, she knocked on the wall, which my grandmother felt was a bit perplexing, because she knew that her husband was already in there, you know, so she didn't understand what it was that she might well have needed that he couldn't sort out for her. Anyway, she went around to the house to see what the problem was. And as she went upstairs into the bedroom, the lady said to her, "You know, I don't know where my husband is. He hasn't come with my cocoa. I'm not sure what's happened. Can you go and find him for me? Because I don't know where he is." And of course, she knew he wasn't downstairs, because she'd come through all the downstairs to go upstairs to the bedroom. So obviously there was only one other place that she had to check, and that was the bedroom opposite to where his wife was. And obviously, when she went to push the door, she couldn't get the door quite open. There was a weight, obviously, hanging on the back of the door, and she didn't know that at the time. So obviously, she wasn't a massive lady. She was, you know, quite small in stature as well. So obviously, the door was quite heavy for her to try and push open. And she was a bit perplexed what was stopping the door from opening as well, because there's nothing behind it. And obviously, eventually, she just gave it one big mighty shove. And as she did that, she heard his shoes bang on the back of the door. And she thought, "Oh my God, no, don't tell me that's what I think it is." And she'd already sensed that there was something wrong. And of course, as soon as she walked in the door and switched the light on, there he was with the rope around his neck. And he'd actually hung it over a hook that he'd put on the door. And he'd kicked the stool from underneath him. and it was just hanging there. And obviously my grandmother knew he'd been passed away a few hours, because obviously the colour had started to drain from him. And obviously the only thing she could do was to go and get something to cut him down, and obviously ring for some help, you know, get some help to come to her, because obviously she knew that there was nothing could be done. You know, he had already passed away.
Wow.
So that was really quite a story and a half, you know, to be hearing that at such a young age. I was only a teenager as well at that time. And obviously my dad and myself straight away knew the person that we were seeing in spirit in the room, in my room and in his, was this gentleman, without a doubt. And obviously, you know, I understood then why he kept coming back to me into my room and waking me up, because I think it triggered the memory of his daughter.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, he didn't realise I wasn't her. And I think that was the thing that was perplexing for him. That's the reason why he kept coming back every single night, probably not knowing why is she not realising who I am, you know. And obviously I didn't know who he was. But to him, it would have been something that he thought I would have recognised, because I was the same age as his daughter when she passed. So I think it really triggered something quite deep within himself to obviously sort of like, you know, make the house so active with his energy. And, you know, probably the fact that we didn't understand why he was there as well, which was probably more frustrating and concerning for my dad rather than myself, because obviously too young really to piece all this together and understand. But obviously that really got me obviously into the paranormal aspect, and obviously being able to see spirit, as I say, and talk to them and listen to them and acknowledge them as well. In a lot of cases, that's where I think sometimes spirit do activity. They do it out of wanting some recognition, some acknowledgement that they are still there. You know, I mean, obviously, I've encountered that so many times in the investigations that I've done myself with my team. And even, you know, when we're doing public investigations, we do public events as well. And we do small group ones where we bring small group of public into a location that we know has got activity within the walls of the venue.
Let's talk a little bit more about the situation when you're a child and prior to all these experiences happening. Mm-hmm. Were you guys the first tenants that then took that property once this man died and the wife moved out at some point?
No, we weren't actually, surprisingly. Oh, wow. We had heard from obviously various people that lived on the road that there used to be a quick tenancy turnover. In other words, there was people in the house for only a short time and then they'd end up leaving, and people couldn't understand why. You know, so that there was never anyone that stayed in the house beyond, I think, 2 months. It seemed to be like they were in and they were gone. And no one really understood the reasons as to why that was happening, you know. And obviously we didn't know either about this until obviously we lived in the house.
With your grandma being the neighbor that that was right there, and people were coming and going. Did she get any inside knowledge? Did anybody say anything to her in those passing months of, there's something wrong in this house, or anything of that?
Absolutely, they did. There was a number of couples that actually did knock on my grandmother's door and ask, you know, what happened in the house, you know, because people were realizing that there was activity there, even though they didn't understand it or couldn't explain it. There was definitely something going off within the four walls. And obviously they'd seen things as well, you know, shadow of the man that was deceased. They were seeing him roaming around the house. They're also hearing him making knocking noises on the wall, which was his signal for my grandmother to, you know, that he was okay and back home from work.
So
you know, all of these things that were happening within the house, my grandmother was trying to obviously explain it a little bit to them without actually frightening them.
Because obviously, which is kind of a difficult, you know, thing to do. It's like, well, the man, his daughter died and he hung himself and I opened the door. But surprise.
Yes, exactly. I mean, obviously, they were not staying that long as it was.
Yeah.
So she didn't want to make their exit a little bit more quicker.
Sure.
Where they were in one day and gone the next.
Well, and it's funny that eventually then you guys ended up being there. What was your grandma's opinion when, you know, your parents said, let's go live in the house where that guy died?
Yes. Well, my grandmother actually said, you know, thinking back on it, she said she'd hoped that perhaps he'd found peace with the fact being it was a family unit, because a few of them that were going in were just young married couples. None of them had any children. So that seemed to be a regular pattern as well that she'd noticed with the tenants that were going in the house. Mm-hmm. We were, however, a family unit and probably the first family unit to actually go in the property since his demise. So obviously, I think my grandmother in hindsight thought, oh, well, maybe this will make him calm things down and make mm-hmm. him not want to keep coming back all the time because yeah. it's a family. You know, it's a different environment when you've got a family to a couple. And maybe, you know, he might settle down with him, keep coming back, you know, and obviously, yeah. For the initial couple of months, we actually thought it seems to have broken the chain. You know, we're not having any activity. No one's seeing anything. No one's hearing anything. Maybe it's finally settled. And then it was, of course, obviously a false sense of security because after the 2 months, it sort of like ramped up another level. You know, it was to the point where the activity was just constant, you know, in the property.
And your dad finally says, OK, we can't keep doing this. The only seeming solution at that moment in time was we just got to move. I mean, was there any other thoughts of is there anything we can do to tamper this down? Obviously, we're talking a different place in time here, too.
Yes, definitely. My dad did actually go to the obviously extremes of getting in a Catholic priest to bless the house in the hopes that that would settle things down and perhaps bring this the spirit to some peace. Because obviously at that time there weren't really very much verse or talked about in the community about this sort of activity being in the property. I mean, you're talking, you know, quite a few years back now. And obviously at that time it was just unheard of. You know, you would never talk to someone, oh, I'm having this happen in my house, what do you think it is? Not like it's so open now, which is a good thing because, you know, people can talk about it now, whereas back then it was very much you know, you were too scared even to tell your neighbor that there was mm-hmm. something going off because you'd be worried not so much about the fact they spread the gossip about, but more to the point of how they'd perceive you, whether you're actually mentally unstable.
Exactly.
You know, because you know, it was one of those that back in that time, you know, people perceived things like paranormal activities, seeing spirit and everything else totally different to how they do now. So, you know, it was a case of really that bringing in the priest and doing a house blessing was really probably as far as they could go with that.
Sure.
In the hopes that things would actually tone down a little bit.
Yeah, so you eventually leave the house, but you're also having the realization that you got some abilities that others may not,
mm-hmm.
and yes. you're more sensitive to things than others. How did that kind of come on and beyond the house where you started to feel and realize this?
I think it was always there. I perhaps didn't really notice it as much at that young age,
mm-hmm.
but certainly as I sort of like left the house, I did actually pick up other spiritual energies around wherever I went, even in school. When I used to go to my primary school, I used to see two young children every single day in the playground. And it turned out those two young children, I found out later on in my life that they'd died from a car accident running outside the school property. They ran across the road and didn't look. And unfortunately, the car couldn't see them in time to stop. So they're both knocked down together. And they were always around the school playground together. And I always thought that everyone else saw them. You know, and I didn't realize that I was the only one. And I kept saying to my friends in the school playground, you know, them two always seem together. You know, they always seem to be together, those two children over there. They never seem to want to come and play with us. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand why. They just seemed so alone in the corner of the playground. And we used to always have all our friends together. And I kept saying to my friends, you know, should we go over and ask them if they want to come and play with us? And of course, she looked at me really weirdly and said, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, what children? I can't see any children. And of course, it was then I started to realize, am I the only one that's seeing this? You know,
yeah.
And obviously, after that happened, I'd actually spoke again to my grandmother, who was a really good mentor for me, because obviously she'd been through that herself in her childhood and all the way through adulthood and into obviously older age as well. And she said to me, you know, you're going to have to understand that not everyone is going to see what you see. You know, I know it's hard for you to understand this, but, you know, it is a gift that you have. You know, not everyone sees these things that are beyond other people's realm of seeing them. And I said to her, what are they? You know, are they just, you know, like a bit of a movie screen type thing where you're seeing a film, or, you know, what exactly are they? And of course, at that time, I hadn't got a clue until she had actually sat down and said to me, what you're seeing is people that's passed on, the spirit. And that's what you're actually seeing. And she says, they see you because they know that you can see them. And that's the reason why they're drawn to you, because they know that you've got that ability to see them. And I thought, wow, you know, I didn't know that. I thought everyone was seeing these two children in the playground. And it sort of like, then I began to understand, well, that's the reason why they're always coming towards me and never to my friends. And of course, whenever I used to talk to them, my friends used to say, why are you talking to yourself? And of course, I didn't realize that they weren't seeing them talking to me, which they were.
So these kids, when you were seeing them, they looked just plain as any other child. There wasn't anything about them that made you go, this is a little weird. Just kids.
No, nothing at all. They were as plain as day as anyone else that you'd, you know, any child that was in that playground, they looked exactly the same. They were solid. They were dressed. They'd got no injuries that was on their face or on their arms or anything like that. They were just normal children, as you would say. The only difference were they weren't living, you know, but other than that, they were exactly the same as any child that was there. You know, they were solid human beings to me rather than spirit.
When you're experiencing that and, you know, from a distance, you see some people over there hanging out doing whatever. How is it that you can tell or can you to this day, you know, let's say you're going at a park. There's some kids playing over there. There's some people sitting on the bench way over there. How do you know if they're, you know, living or dead if they look the same to you without literally going up to them?
That's where my senses have definitely developed over the years because I can tell the difference straight away. Obviously, you know, I've evolved with my gift since that time when I was so much younger. And obviously, I've had to do a lot of understanding and a lot of research from my own perspective to get a handle on what it is that I'm experiencing. And obviously, when I'm actually now in any place, whether it be a location or shop or around somebody who's got a loved one around them that wants them to know that they're okay, I will see that person and I will automatically know that person's deceased. It's just a really clear knowing, as we call it. And you just know, you know, there's no way, you know, anytime I see them, more often than not now, I know as soon as I walk in anywhere, who's in there, how many people are in there, whether the female, male, what age they are, what sort of time period they're from, what age they were when they possibly passed away, and what ailments that took them, you know, whether it be illness or whether it was a natural thing. You know, all of that information I can usually gauge straight off. Not even seeing the spirit, I can gauge that just from their energy.
I would imagine that there's a lot of people around the living that are trying to communicate and get things to them. How is that when you're walking through a shopping center or something of that nature where there's a lot of people around? And you are you bombarded with spirits going, this one sees us. I really need to let Joe here know this.
Yes.
Is it just constant tugging you in every direction, or how do you manage this?
That used to be the case. It isn't the case now because I've set my boundaries with spirit.
Okay.
That, you know, that they have a time and a place to actually come forward and communicate with me. And I don't now. I know now that obviously going into a supermarket and being bombarded by spirit people that want to give messages that need to be passed on to the loved ones that they're with is not really the ideal place to do that sort of thing. It's not the ideal setting because some of the information can be quite upsetting to the people that you're passing the messages on. And also there can be quite, in depth in information. And obviously that sort of thing is better to be delivered in a private setting, in a proper room environment where they have the privacy to have that information given to them. And obviously a lot of it is quite overwhelming for them as well, especially if it's someone that's recently deceased. You know, and obviously whatever the circumstances, whether they didn't get a chance to say their goodbyes or, you know, there was something that they wanted to ask or something. something they wanted to say before the person passed away and they never got that opportunity. All of those things can bring up a lot of different mixed emotions, and that's the reason why it's not ideal to go into a supermarket and give everyone the messages that obviously their loved ones want passing on. Not the right place to do it.
Did you have a time earlier on, you know, before you kind of developed this and understood it, where you would go up to people kind of at random because this was kind of new at the moment and deliver messages?
No, I can honestly say, hand on heart, I have never done that ever. And that's me, rather than spirit pushing, I've just said, no, it is not the place for me to be telling, you know, your departed person that's here with you that, you know, you need to know this information. I mean, obviously, this is the time sometimes where you just have to be a little bit more in control of the gift, because obviously if you're not and they control you, then obviously you're going to lose all sense of purpose. And if you're not careful, you'll get so overwhelmed and bombarded by spirit, it's going to make you physically sick. You know, you're going to be very ill, very run down, and, you know, it can just lead to a whole host of health problems for yourself if you're not careful.
Sure.
So it's all about really protecting your energy and setting those boundaries with the spirit realm, you know, that if you do need messages passing on, you know, there are means of ways of doing that, but not in a supermarket or shop or a hospital environment. It has to be done in a proper set environment where the person you're delivering that message to feels comfortable and feels safe in the knowing that that information is being given in a private setting rather than an audience who's all listening in on information that they don't want other people to know. You know, you have to be very sensitive about it with the person that you're giving the messages to, as well as the spirit that wants to give it, you know, to be passed on. So you have to sort of like balance it out with everything, really. But once you get that understanding and the boundaries set with spirit, and also you protect yourself enough to say, look, you know, I'm coming out, I'm living my physical life, not my gifted life where I'm connecting with you guys all the time. You know, I do have a physical life of my own. You know, I'm a human being, as well as the fact that I connect with spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, I do have a family and I do my other daily activities as well as. So, you know, they have to realize that, you know, you're not just always in their realm because you connect with them. You're in your realm as well, you know. So it's, again, a balancing act as well with that.
Has there been a situation at all where, you know, you're not going to suddenly stop everything in the supermarket and go, hey, I want to tell you this. But has there been a thing where it's like, look, there's something that you should know, but we need to go to a different setting or something, and just kind of pull somebody away to get to that? Or how do you use this to communicate when you get these sort of messages? Is it only people who come to you and say, hey, can you tell me anything? Or do you reach out to people and say, there's something I think you should know, but let's go over here and talk or something like that?
Yeah, so I do both. Obviously, if there is a real, you know, big urgent sort of message, as I would say, from spirit that needs to be delivered, and they need that clarity to be given to the person, their loved one, that's here still in the physical realm, then obviously I will say, look, you know, I will approach them, I will give them my phone number, I will tell them a little bit about what I do, and also ask them, you know, that I have got a message that needs delivering to you from your loved one, but we need to do it in a different environment to where we are now. So I give them the opportunity that if they do want that message, they can reach out, they can come and communicate with me, and we will set up a meeting where I can deliver that message to them. And usually spirit are quite good. If they're very persistent with the message, they will wait. You know, a lot of people think, well, by the time you've got the meeting set up, they might have just walked off and thought, well, you know, I'll leave it. You're taking too long. That's not the case. I've always noticed no matter how long these things will take, spirit will always wait. If the message is urgent and they still want that message delivering, they will wait and they will come back and they'll say, right, now's the time to give you that message. So you can pass that on to them, and they'll do it in the right way. You know, I mean, obviously, I think that's the main issue, really, is not to to do it in an environment that, you know, is not suitable for the information you're going to deliver. You know, if it was just something generalized, you know, as in to do with the living rather than the dead, you know, then it's a different matter. Of course, you can go up and say, oh, this, I've just seen somebody down there who's selling something at $5.99. You know, you can go up and tell them that. You can't go up and say to them, oh, by the way, I've got your dead auntie who wants to have a chat with you about something. They keep persistently telling me they want to tell you something. You can't possibly go up, you know, anyone that would not be used to that sort of thing as well, mm-hmm. they'd look at you gone out and think you're crazy. You know, I mean, I would if I was in their position, which is often what I do. I always put myself in their position when I'm got spirit that want to deliver a message. How would I feel and how would I be wanting to be approached with something so delicate? You know, because it is a delicate thing, you know, especially if they've recently deceased, you know, they're still in mourning, they're still grieving. So you don't want some mad person coming up and saying, oh, yeah. I've got your Uncle Freddie, who's just wanting to tell you this, that and the other, you yeah. know, and they're in the middle of the aisle of the supermarket. You know, it's just not the thing that I would do. You know, to me, it's sure. just a no-no.
Do all of us have someone or some multiple people, the messages waiting for us that we are not able to hear until we encounter someone like yourself? Or is it just certain people at certain times have a loved one or somebody that's kind of following them around and waiting to deliver?
I mean, I think everyone has got a bit of sensitivity about them. It doesn't matter whether you think you're gifted or not. Everyone has the ability to be psychic and open the senses enough to be able to feel their own loved ones around them. You know, I mean, some people have a great sense of smell where, you know, if the dad that comes through the house who's passed away, they can smell the cigarette smoke from them, you know. So obviously they're not psychic or anything, but they got the sensitivity that they can smell it. So they know that the departed dad is around because they can smell his cigarette smoke and there's no one in the house that smokes. It's those little things, those little signs that give you a bit of reassurance, which is what spirit like to do. They like to give people a reassurance that they are around, whether that be delivering a message to them through a medium or a psychic, or just to let them know themselves, I'm here with you, you're not on your own, you know, especially in times when they're needed the most. You know, if you're getting someone who's going through a really terrible time, you know, they seem to be having endless problems or they're going through a breakup with a relationship, something traumatic like that, then you will often know that your loved ones are around because they'll give you the signs. They'll let you know that they're there. You know, they'll either leave a white feather in a place that you've got no windows or doors open and all of a sudden a white feather appears out of nowhere. What's that all about? That's another sign that they will give, you know, or they'll drop a penny. If you're having hardship times with financial difficulties, they'll often drop you a penny to say, you know, we know that you're in need of financial assistance. We're here, you know, and they'll drop you a coin just out of thin air. When you've looked around, there's no coins anywhere, and all of a sudden there's coins on the table. No one's been in and put it there, mm-hmm. and you know it wasn't there when you were in the room before you left it. So, you know, it's all those little unique signs that they do give to the living every single day, you know, that to let them know that they're around. It's just how people perceive those little signals to say that they're there. Some people will think, oh, that's a bit weird. You know, I've just found a feather and I haven't even opened a door, window, nothing. How's that come in the house? I'm only one here, you know, so how could that have been possibly brought to you? Then sometimes that will trigger someone to think, well, what does white feather mean? You know, then they'll start thinking a bit more into it as to why they've got that there, because it's not a normal thing for them to see. It's just little things like that, and feeling the temperature of the room change as well is another good one. You know, sometimes you'll be sitting there with a roaring fire, you know, and it's really warm, the nice environment in the room, and then all of a sudden the temperature just drops like that and they can't explain it because there's no drafts, no windows, no doors open. Where's this draft coming from? Where's this cold air blasting through? And it just seems to last only for a few minutes and it's gone again. It's dispersed. And it's those little signs, again, that they will let them know that they're around. You know, they'll just get the goosebumps on around their arms and things like that. And all the shivers, you know, down the spine, thinking, oh, it feels like someone's just stepped over my grave sort of thing. Again, that's them coming close to let you know they're around. And often that's usually all they like to do is just let them know, give them a little sign without having bombarding them with messages. Because not every spirit who's passed on wants to give a message. They just want to let them know, the loved ones that are here, just to reassure them that they're not on their own. They are still here. They're still watching. They're still listening. And, you know, they're just not with them in the physical element, really.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Linda. In part two, is it always the case that the messages the dead bring to the living being crucial? Is it true that the other side has messages waiting for literally everyone? And in the afterlife, do animals have the same ability to communicate with us as humans have? That and much more as we dive into the conversation deeper with Linda. Check it out. If you are a gravekeeper, sign up to be one at thegravetalks.com or go to the Patreon app and search The Grave Talks. There you can sign up to be a gravekeeper. You'll get access to all of our episodes, part one, part two, hundreds of them to binge away on, all ad-free. It's only $5 a month. Patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.